from Mathematics Münster. This is On a Tangent, the podcast where we tell the stories behind the mathematics and explore the fascinating paths that lead early career researchers to Münster. My name is Carlo Kaul. I'm a PhD student in arithmetic geometry, and I have the privilege of following in Simon's footsteps to bring new stories to you in the months to come. For the first episode of this new season, I am joined by Maxime Ramsey, a rising star in the field of algebraic K-theory and homotopical algebra. Maxime's academic journey began in Paris, where he studied at Sorbonne University and the École Normale Supérieure. From there, he moved north to the University of Copenhagen to pursue his PhD in algebraic topology under Jesper Grodal, a period during which he was also awarded a prestigious travel grant from the Danish Ministry of Education and Research. Since 2024, he has made Münster his home, working as a postdoc in Thomas Nikolaus' group. So it's great to have you here, Maxime.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The first thing I want to ask you is, what is your first experience with mathematics? How did you get into mathematics? What's your first memory, maybe?
I think it's difficult to answer. I think I have one memory that it strikes me as the first. I don't know if it probably isn't, but it's, I guess, I went to see this exhibit at some point when I was like, I don't know, 8. And I discovered that mathematician was a job that you could have. And I remember being kind of confused because when you're 8, you don't really know what math is. You know about numbers and everything. So it was, I think it was somewhere in Paris, but I forgot where it was in Paris. But it was, my mom took me to this exhibit and there was like a video of like Villani or something talking. He didn't have a field medal at that point, so he was just kind of there. Yeah, so that was kind of nice.
Cool, so it was a math exhibit.
Yeah, it was a math exhibit. There were all these shapes, all these figures, and like, I don't know, I remember triangles or something. But yeah, I guess I always kind of, you know, was somewhat good at math at school, but it, for a long time, wasn't really a thing that I considered as a thing.
So you also grew up in the Paris area?
Or? Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs of Paris, southwest of Paris.
And how did a typical day look for you when you were like in middle school or high school? Or?
I think pretty standard. I don't know, I went to school usually most days. Woke up around 7 or something, and then would go to school. I guess it was a bit longer in high school than middle school. And then I would come home and sort of do my homework and maybe play video games, play Warhammer with some friends.
Okay.
Watch some series.
Okay. And when did it start to become serious, your interest in mathematics?
I would say the last 2 years of high school, probably.
Okay.
Specifically the last year of high school is when I started thinking seriously about doing research in math or physics. I wasn't sure at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a really good friend with whom we spoke about physics and math all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing fencing together, and our fencing teacher hated us for like talking about math during the warm-ups. And I think it really started when my dad told me about this video about ordinals. So I didn't know about ordinals at the time, and I was like, it came from a weird conversation we had where we're arguing about infinity versus infinity squared.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad had explained to me that they were actually the same and linked me to this video.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point I started being interested in set theory.
Yeah.
And I started doing research with big quote marks.
Okay.
But like, I would spend some of my breaks in high school where you're not supposed to, you know, think about school, but I was starting to think about math at the time. I think I would say last year of high school was
cool. So it was more like a personal thing that you became interested, or was it also a teacher, or how did this start for you, this interest?
I think it was mostly personal. So as I said, like, I think mostly with my dad.
Yeah.
I had an excellent, like, I had really a huge amount of luck with my teachers in high school.
Yeah.
I had the same teacher in first year of high school and last year of high school, and he was really, really amazing teacher. So I think it really helped to have a teacher like this.
Yeah.
But he's not really the one who made me want to go into this thing, even though he really sort of influenced it in that sense.
Okay, cool. And then, so you still didn't know between math and physics, and
yeah.
So what was the next step for you after that?
Yeah, so after that, I went to this, I don't know if you know about Prépa, so this is like a sort of weird university thing in France.
Yeah.
And so I went there, and it was pretty heavy curriculum with, so math, physics, a bit of computer science, a bit of French, a bit of English.
Ah, yeah, okay.
But the most two things, the main two things were like math and physics.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I had a really excellent math teacher, like top-notch math teacher at that point. On the other hand, I had a not-so-great physics teacher, and I hope she's not listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
But I had a really sort of way worse physics teacher. And then, so at that point, it sort of became clear to me that I wouldn't get a lot of physics out of her. And in this sort of intense curriculum, you don't really have time. Well, you do have time if you don't do all the subjects, but if you do all the subjects, you don't really have time to actually sort of do stuff on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized I would have to do mostly math. And I really liked it
mm-hmm.
there, specifically because of my teacher. And I really didn't like physics anymore. So the choice was made for me kind of at that point.
Okay, so how old were you then?
I think I was about 17.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was 17 at the point. And I kind of gave up on physics.
Okay.
Even though I still have some kind of, you know, a non-research interest in it, but it was, at that point.
And then after this prepa, there's like a canonical choice which school to go to, or how does it go on?
There's a bunch of different schools,
okay.
But this prepa thing is you have some kind of competitive exam at the end, so you're
mm-hmm.
not, even though you have maybe schools you want to go to, you can't necessarily get into them.
Mm-hmm.
So the canonical school for research was DNS, and
mm-hmm.
I was very lucky to be able to get into there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's unclear what I would have done.
Okay, but you kind of did two universities at the same time, right? How to imagine that?
Yeah, it's not really the case. So the NS is kind of, again, it's kind of like Dubai, it's kind of this thing besides the university.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all these universities, which is like standard curriculum and kind of EU sort of, you know, it's the same thing all across EU.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have these sort of side thing, which is kind of French.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't give you a master's diploma.
Okay.
And so you have to register at a different place to
okay.
get a master's diploma. And what they do is they also outsource a bunch of their classes. So
yeah.
I had, in total, not so many classes at ENS, mostly the first year and a bit the second year.
Yeah.
But most of my time was actually at university.
Okay.
I mean, most of my school time was mostly at university. The ENS was mostly social.
All right. Sounds good. So how did you become then interested in your field of research in topology or algebraic topology or categories? How did this start for you?
That was sort of a long, very, very long process, which I think, so I've always been more of an algebra-oriented person. Like I've never liked analysis or anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my worst grades probably in probability theory and analysis when I was at the ENS.
Yeah.
So it was always, I was always sort of bound to go to one of these more algebraic abstract fields.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of hesitation when I was in my second year, I guess, where I was hesitant between algebraic topology. I had a really good teacher
mm-hmm.
in algebraic topology as well. Representation theory, I really liked that because it was a lot of linear algebra and it was a bit cool linear algebra.
Yeah.
and logic and set theory. I think that's also the main contenders were logic and set theory as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a really strong relationship with some set theorists on an online math forum.
Okay.
Where we like talked a lot about math at the time. And I think ultimately it's kind of random luck and circumstances that made me go for algebraic topology rather than logic. In fact, I almost gave up on algebraic topology at some point
mm-hmm.
because my teacher in the first class I had in this topic was really good, except for one specific notion that he introduced in a way that I simply could not wrap my head around. So if you know a bit about this, like CW complexes,
mm-hmm.
specific type of topological space,
mm-hmm.
and the way he introduced them, I mean, there's several perspectives, and
yeah.
the one he chose
yeah.
made no sense at all to me, and it seemed to be a pretty important
yes.
part of algebraic topology, so I was like,
yeah.
man, if I don't understand this, I can't do this field at all.
Yeah.
Luckily, afterwards, like I understood them better, and so I got back on the track, but the main reason I ended up doing algebraic topology is that in the second year of the NS, we have to do this abroad sort of studies for a few months. And when I asked around, the main people who gave me advice were the algebraic topologists, specifically Muriel Livernet in Paris,
mm-hmm.
Told me, if you want to do algebraic topology, you should go to Copenhagen.
Okay.
And so I went there for a few months,
mm-hmm.
and there I still had a lot of like hesitations between different fields. But the environment was really nice, and I started learning a bit more of this algebraic topology stuff. And so when I came back and did more classes, then I got really into it at the end of the day. But I still was hesitant, and ultimately, what happened is that I did my master's with an algebraic topologist because, again, he was the main person who answered. But at this point, it would have been more difficult, but I would still possibly have done maybe logic or set theory or something. But because of this, these circumstances, I ended up doing algebraic topology. And I don't regret it at all. I'm very happy I chose this path, actually, in the end of the day.
Very nice. So Copenhagen was then a natural choice to go on for a PhD?
Probably. Yeah, exactly. So I had gone once and I had met already my future advisor, Jesper, during this semester abroad, and we had really gotten along. So at the end of my master's, I asked my master's advisor, like, what should I do? And he said that I could definitely do a thesis with him if I wanted, but that he recommended going to Copenhagen instead if I could. And so I emailed Jesper. And then from there, I applied and everything and sort of,
yeah. So this kind of algebraic topology you did was a really big thing in Copenhagen.
Exactly.
Did you have a big group or?
I think so. When the first time I went, because I was sort of just a weird master's student coming around and no one knew really why, because it's a kind of weird thing to do. So I didn't interact with the whole group, but I think it was already a pretty big group. But when I was there for my thesis, then it was really a huge group. I mean, there's lots of really, they did an amazing job hiring people. So there's really, really amazing postdocs and PhD students and professors. So a lot of opportunities to speak and to interact with people. So it's really, really strong place for that field. Yeah.
Cool. And it was already in your master's that this was kind of this categorical algebraic topology, working a lot with these infinity categories and higher algebra or...
That's when it developed because, I mean, at the beginning, one other field that I really liked when I was hesitant between many things was category theory. But I was told by various people that it's not a research, I mean, that you shouldn't really just do research in category theory because it's a bit sort of too abstract and not a lot of real things. But I knew about it. And so when I did my master's in algebraic topology, sort of my advisor really taught me infinity categories along the way. So it was sort of it was a master's where he told me at the beginning, we're going to try and prove a result. It's not a very difficult result. But along the way, if we get there, you'll have learned this stuff. And this is exactly what happened. So along the way, I really learned a bunch of stuff. It was during COVID. So I had nothing else, literally nothing else to do than read a bunch of stuff about this and email him a million questions. And he was very sort of present to answer these questions.
Very nice. Your PhD thesis topic, did you decide that for yourself or how did it go on then with your interests?
Right. Yeah, I think Jesper sort of has a bunch of papers that he recommends to students, to all his students, incoming students. And it's really, really, a really good thing to do because you kind of feel free to do something, to do what you like, but you still have a really strong sort of goal is to understand these papers in the end. And so he did this, and along the way, I forged my own sort of tastes and questions that I cared about and everything under his guidance and my other advisor that I met a bit later, Markus Land. We discussed a lot, and somehow more than being given problems, I was really sort of advised about the problems I cared about. And so I didn't really have one specific thesis project, ultimately. I had a bunch of different projects that I thought about a lot.
Yeah.
And at the end, towards the last year or something, I had to decide what would actually be the thesis.
Yeah.
But that came towards the end, really. And didn't have sort of a project that I worked for, a specific one that I worked for 3 years.
So can you give us the title of your PhD thesis?
It's called Separability in Homotopy Theory and Topological Horschel Homology, I think. Because it's basically two independent parts that have basically nothing to do with one another.
Yeah.
And they really decided at the end, I need a thesis. How should I do this?
Yeah, and whoever's in Münster knows this topological Hochschild homology maybe as a kind of keyword for the research of Thomas Nikolaus, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of the big players in this kind of field. Yeah.
And so, how did you come up with going to Münster? What was that like then?
So Münster actually was my master's advisor actually suggested two places for me as opposed to France. He said you should go to Copenhagen or to Münster if you can. I ended up going to Copenhagen mostly because of the time. I mean, I had already been there, so I already sort of was familiar with the place, and so time wise it matched better. But then during my thesis, I interacted a lot with Thomas and with Achim, who was here at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, and somehow we got along really well. Mm-hmm. And Thomas is one of the, leaders in our field. Yeah. So I think there's not a lot of people who would get an opportunity to work here wouldn't take it.
Right.
And so when at some point I came to visit him, mentioned that I was looking for jobs, and then we started talking about this, and I applied, and ultimately came here. But I of course knew about this way beforehand. I knew about Thomas and Münster way before, because he and Achim are very influential in our field.
Yeah, very nice. Okay, so now you're in Münster, and besides maybe being a very good place for research, at least in my opinion, it's also a great city. So do you have what was your first place outside the campus where you really enjoyed going, or do you now have maybe a favorite place inside the city?
So I was a bit stupid in my first year coming here, in that sort of I traveled a really huge amount, mm-hmm. and so I was not very present here, and mm-hmm. I didn't get in the first year to enjoy the city so much.
Yeah.
And I'm only now really getting to grips with the city. I think one of the places I go to often, biweekly or something, is the climbing gym. So that's not very original. Mm-hmm. And it's not really a place you go to hang out. But I really like the Aze. Mm-hmm. I take regular walks around the Aze. That's really nice. I also like the Botanical Garden. Mm-hmm. And there's also a playground next to my house where I go when there's no one's around to play.
Nice.
So that's really
very
nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Okay, and maybe now you're two years as a postdoc, so you have a lot of research experience already, also doing your PhD. And it's maybe for someone who didn't yet do any research in mathematics, or also for people who did, it's always hard to imagine how other people like research. So what does research really look like for you on a daily basis, maybe? How do you do your research?
Yeah, that's a fun question. It's the trick I use when people ask me what I do for work.
Yeah.
Because then they ask me what does it mean to do math research? And I always, they often ask what I research, and I often bend the question to what do you do during your daily life? Which I think is a better question for
yes,
people.
I totally agree.
I think it varies a lot, but most of the days, when I don't have to teach or prepare a teaching or a grade or whatever, most of the days look like I have one or two meetings where I'll talk to someone about either a project that's ongoing or a project that we're starting or finishing. And that's a lot of discussion and collaboration.
Yeah.
That part I really enjoy. I enjoy it much better when it's in person. But of course, given how international research is, you kind of have to also often sort of be on Zoom. That's a bit less fun, but it's still very fun. And the other parts of the day are spent either writing stuff, which is kind of boring and annoying, and it's the part that I like the least, or thinking about stuff, and that can look weird because you're kind of on your desk just staring out into the air, and after 2 hours you feel like you've done something productive.
So you're really someone who just thinks and doesn't write anything down for a whole hour and just thinks.
No, it depends. It'll happen often.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I don't have, I start writing when I think I have a place to go. But when I don't have a place to go, I try to do stuff in my... I end up doing stuff in my head. And I only write when I think I have a clue of what to do.
Yeah.
But I do use a lot of paper. You've been in my office a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah.
You've seen the mass of papers that was there. So I do write also. I also have a whiteboard, but I use this mostly when I talk to people alone.
Yes.
Alone, I don't use that so much.
Yeah. No, but that really speaks to the conceptuality of your research. If you can do things in your head, then it's really most about concept and less about calculation.
Yeah. There's basically no. I'm very afraid of calculations. I have a lot of respect for people who are able to do calculations because I'm always super scared of them.
Yeah.
I'm both super scared of them, because they're difficult, but also when you do one yourself, I'm always very afraid of checking that I didn't make a mistake. It's much easier for me to be convinced that I didn't make a mistake in conceptual arguments.
Cool.
Ones that you can actually hold in your head.
Now that we've gotten to know Maxime a bit better, we will come to the second part of this podcast. This is the so-called A or B game. For this game, which will consist of 30 A or B questions, I will ask Maxime to answer as quickly as possible in order to get an idea about his intuitive thoughts on topics like music, Münster or mathematics. Okay, so let's start. My first question is 0 or 1?
0.
Analysis or algebra?
Algebra.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Bouldering or hiking?
Bouldering.
Snooze or getting up?
Snooze.
The morning or the night?
Night.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Order or chaos?
Chaos.
Great. Cooking or ordering food?
Cooking.
Mensa or no Mensa?
Mensa.
By bike or by foot?
Bike.
Slides or blackboard?
Blackboard.
Technical proofs or conceptual proofs?
Conceptual proofs.
PDFs or physical copies?
PDFs.
Condensed Anima or Infinity Topoi?
Condensed Anima.
Quasi-categories or complete Sega spaces?
Neither.
Okay. So that's a skip. Okay. Higher topo theory or higher algebra?
Higher algebra.
Model theory or categorical logic?
Categorical logic.
Invented or discovered?
Discovered.
Conjecture or counterexample?
Counterexample.
Copenhagen or Paris?
Copenhagen.
Scandinavia or France?
Scandinavia.
Sorbonne or ENS?
ENS.
Math stack exchange or math overflow?
Math overflow.
Clapping or knocking?
Clapping.
Ratatat or Supertramp?
Supertramp. That's a difficult one.
But you're very decisive. It's very
I'm trying my best.
It's amazing. Etymology or semantics?
Etymology.
Ballroom or hip-hop?
Hip-hop.
To be or not to be?
To be.
You've already done it. Great.
Okay, well, that was fast. Yeah. That was 30?
Yeah, that was already 30. Yeah, okay. Maybe next time I need to do more questions.
Yeah, I'm surprised, actually.
Yeah, but not everyone is as decisive as you. So
okay.
You really did an amazing job.
The thing is, I know I'm usually very, very undecisive, so I tried my best. So yeah. Sometimes I answered even though that was not what I meant.
So with a complete Sega space or quasi categories, you say Nisa because
there's this, you know, this idea of model independence, mm-hmm. and it's not a very well defined thing, but it's the idea that infinity categories are a concept that's like implemented by either quasi categories or complete Sega space, but is neither. And mm-hmm. I like arguments that don't really specify which one you're working in, that are still precise, mm-hmm. but that use abstract features that aren't specific to either model. And I think specifying the model usually makes your arguments less conceptual and clear.
Cool. So very good. And another thing I was wondering about, so when deciding between bouldering and hiking, you said hiking, right?
I think I said bouldering.
Ah, you said bouldering. Okay.
So I was a bit that was one of the ones where I was hesitant because I obviously boulder a lot more like on a daily day because I do it like once or twice a week. But I actually really, really like hiking, and I think if there were, like, if you want to hike here, you have to sort of, you know, go out the city and so on. So it takes more work, but maybe if it was more accessible, I would maybe insert something different. I'm not sure.
Okay, because there's also maybe a middle ground which is climbing, like these climbing gyms, they also exist, right? But you're like on a daily basis, you go bouldering.
Yeah. I actually haven't learned to climb yet. I mean, of course, it's mostly you need to learn how to belay and everything, and I think you need a class for this, and it costs some money, so and you only need to be at least 2 people and so on. So I decided I didn't do it yet.
What was also really interesting to me was how decisive you were when deciding between Copenhagen and Paris, and also between Scandinavia and France, because you grew up in Paris, right?
I did. Yes. So, it's been a long process to actually decide, because it's going to matter at some point.
Yes.
And I think ultimately there's a couple of different things. One is from purely professional perspective, research wise, mm-hmm. Scandinavia and Copenhagen are just much better places than Paris and France, because I, of course, as a researcher, you're not trying to be rich, but there's this this comfort aspect to your life that is much more present if you're in Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
Personal wise, because that was sort of the most difficult thing, was to decide, like, is this professional advantage sufficient to make me want to move to Scandinavia or something? But personal wise, I first of all have now my best friend slash partner is in is in is from Denmark.
Yes.
And so that already sort of hinges you towards the place.
Yeah.
But also I really got to enjoy the Danish way of life.
Yeah.
And so ultimately now I'm sort of aimed towards getting back to Denmark.
Great. So for the final part of the podcast, I want to ask you 5 questions, which are just things I'm curious about. So let's start with the first question. This is, what is your favorite theorem?
Wow. what is my favorite theorem? I think it's a very basic one, but it comes back to one of your earlier questions about how did you get into math. I think I really, really loved the proof of Bezout's theorem the first time I saw it, because it was such a clean argument.
Yeah.
That at this point, when you were in high school in math, you don't do a lot of actual proofs. And this was one of the first like real proofs that I saw.
Yeah.
And so it kind of stuck to me. And I think I think this might be because for nostalgic reasons, basically my favorite theorem. I don't know.
Very cool. I can totally relate to that. So I also liked my first like algebra course a lot.
Yeah.
So great. Which of your results are you most proud of?
This is a difficult question as well. I think it's in between something I've already done and something I'm currently writing and soon done with. But I think currently it's probably so a result with my colleagues and friends, Vova Sosnino and Christoph Finges, which is about this category of localizing motives, which is something kind of very abstract and difficult to explain in the podcast. But basically, there was this construction that was sort of very nice and got a lot of interest, and we showed that there's a different perspective one can have on this construction that is close, that sort of makes an analogy with a different field of math, so for operator algebraic K-theory, much clearer, and it makes it much closer to that other field of math, and it sort of clarifies a bunch of things about, I mean, in my opinion, about this category.
If you can relate to fields of math, this is always very powerful.
Right? So yeah, exactly.
You see this all the time, yeah. Cool. So which mathematical field would you have gone into if it wasn't like higher algebra and what you're doing now? Maybe this is an easier one for you to answer.
This is an easier one, yeah. Probably the answer would have been set theory or logic. Mm-hmm. I think I still really enjoy thinking about, reading a little bit about cardinal arithmetic and stuff like this whenever I get the chance. And it does come up a little bit in algebraic topology.
Right.
So I'm happy I have this background also.
With condensed anima, for example.
For example, yeah.
So you like to choose a kappa.
Exactly, I like to choose a kappa, yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay, so maybe harder question again. So what would be your biggest professional regret? So what would you have maybe done differently during this whole time? So it sounds like you had really this perfect, like you passed through everything. But do you have anything which you would have changed in retrospect? The answer can also be no.
No, I think there are, they're kind of this two, and I think they're of the same nature, but applied to different, slightly different thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe I would have fought a bit harder about physics, because now I feel that I really don't understand a lot about of course I know all the pop science-y things about physics that one can know when one is interested in these things. But I don't know anything about serious physics, quote unquote. And I think that would have been nice to know a bit more about. And on a similar note, there's other fields of math that I sort of didn't focus on as much as I wanted to, as I would have wanted to now. For example, I think I took a few classes in algebraic geometry, but I think I could have easily done more in that direction. And I think at the expense of some other things, probably I would have had to, but I would have broadened my scope a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And the final question, which is maybe even the hardest. So what advice would you give in master's students, someone who's a master's student right now and who's maybe looking to go into research in your field or maybe a related field?
I think it's related to what I just said, which is that I think just learn a bunch of different things. Even if you have an area of predilection that you think you're definitely going to go into, and that may well be true. Do try to learn other areas that will that will necessarily help,
yeah,
no matter what.
Yeah.
I think that would be sort of the most important advice.
Very nice. So now we've gotten to know you a bit. So it was really nice talking to you about your past and your present and your thoughts on mathematics. So now, of course, we would like to get to know your research a bit more. So we will now switch to a video format for the second part of the podcast. And we will talk with each other in a minute again.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of this new season of On a Tangent. Since we're launching a new format, I would love to hear your thoughts. You can send feedback directly to mail@carlo.info. If you enjoyed the conversation with Maxime as much as I did, please consider sharing this episode with a friend or a colleague. In the show notes, you can also find a link to the video part of my conversation with Maxime, where he explains how to do algebra on a donut. I'm Carlo, and I will catch you on the next tangent.